Last week we talked about when the Passover sacrifice was made in ancient Israel. And this week we're going to look at that, but in a little bit different manner. And as you look at this, why discuss this? And it all has to do with the way that all this plays out in our time as far as when we observe the Passover and all of that and the representation there and why we do the things, the way that we do them. You know, sometimes you think, well, we just pick this out randomly out of a hat and said, well, we'll just do it this way, but that's not the case. You've gone through and investigated the situation, therefore make a decision to do it on this night in this particular way for a specific reason. So we looked at the Old Testament Passover, and as I said last time, we looked at when the sacrifice was made in ancient Israel, and we saw that that time was between the two evenings. And we went through various things that discussed what it mean, what the two evenings means, and we looked at different proofs that show why it unfolded the way that it did. So, they gathered they all came together, and each household sacrificed the lamb, and at sunset, between sunset and darkness, total darkness, on the evening of the 14th. And we looked at that, and we saw why that took place and the significance of it for us. And so we're going to look at it, but in a little bit different way today. So let's, as we thought about this, we think about what we're going to do on Passover. What are we doing when we keep Passover? Are we commemorating when Israel left Egypt? And we looked at the fact that that's not the case at all. It's commemorating the blood of the lamb being applied to their doors and lintels. And for us, that blood being applied to our lives in order that we can be forgiven of sin. In order that God can pass over us and we can be forgiven. So we realize that we commemorate the Passover and we do it in a specific way, and we will do that once again this year. But this afternoon we want to look at eight different questions which we will answer. The first question is when were the Passover lambs killed? And we already looked at that, so we already have one of them done. So we have seven more to go. And the second question is where were the Passover lambs killed? Where were the Passover lambs killed? And this is back in ancient Israel. There is no tabernacle. There is no temple in what we're looking at. So where were the Passover lambs killed? And we begin to answer that in Exodus chapter 12, verse 3. Exodus chapter 12, verse 3. And we'll look at verses 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4 say, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons, according to each man's need. You shall make your count for the lamb." So where did they make the sacrifice of the lamb? At their household, at their house. So you would do it at your house, and if your household was small, you might combine with a neighbor and do the sacrifice there. The larger households would have a lamb to themselves, and the smaller ones would combine with another household in order to make the sacrifice. So they were killed. They were to be killed at their household or at their neighbor's household if they combined with their neighbor. Exodus chapter 12, verse 6. It says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the month. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight," that is, between the two evenings. "And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it." So they were to kill the lambs and to put it on the lintels and the doorpost. And if they were combining with another household, then where the lamb was sacrificed, they would put it on that household, and if the other people were away at the neighbor's, it still counted for them. All right, so they would make that sacrifice and put it on the doorpost and the lintel at the house where they were observing the Passover. The verses 6 and 7 tell us that the Passover consisted not only of the slaying of the lamb, but also of the eating of the lamb. So they slayed the lamb there at between sunset and darkness. And then they ate it. They began the process of preparing the lamb. And why is it important to recognize it's not only the slaying of the lamb, but it's also the roasting of the lamb and eating it. As you look at these things and understand them, it indicates both had to occur on the Passover in order to be a part of the Passover. So you wouldn't kill the Passover on one night and then eat it the next. You did it all in one night. You did it all in one night. And you couldn't do it on two nights. Otherwise, that would not be following God's instructions. So where were the lambs killed? They were killed at the houses of the people who were going to observe Passover together. The third question is this: where were the children of Israel during that entire night? So the night began at sunset, and you had between the two evenings, you had to sacrifice the lamb. And where did the people of Israel stay during that night? Where did they stay? Well, they were in their houses, and they remained in their houses the entire night. And they didn't go out until the next morning. As you look at Exodus chapter 12, verse 22, it says, And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. So where were they to stay during this night? They were staying in their house until morning. Then the children of Israel went away and did as they were instructed. So they sacrificed the lamb, they took care of the blood, and then they stayed in their houses during the night. Next question is this. This is the fourth question. Where were their houses? Where were their houses? Let's look at Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8. Exodus chapter 8, and let's begin in verse 20. Exodus 8, verse 20. In chapter 8, it says, And the Lord said to Moses, Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. And say to him, Thus says the Lord, Let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies on you and your servants, on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians shall be full of swarms of flies. And also the ground on which they stand. So they're going to be overwhelmed with flies or gnats or something to that effect. And so he's telling them, unless you let my people go, this will be the consequence. So this is one of the plagues earlier than when the firstborn were killed. And verse 22 is the key verse here. It says, And in that day I will set apart the land of Goshen. Why would he set apart the land of Goshen? That's because that's where Israel lived. The people of Israel lived in the land of Goshen. It says, speaking of Goshen, in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies shall be there, in order that you may know that I am the Lord God, Lord in the midst of the land. So their houses in which they sacrificed the lambs were in the land of Goshen. So where they sacrificed the lambs was in the land of Goshen. And if you look at the handout that I gave you, the third page has a map, and it gives you a general idea where the land of Goshen was. In verse 23, Moses says, I will make a difference between my people and your people. Tomorrow this sign shall be. So their houses were in that portion of Egypt called Goshen. And that portion of Egypt had actually been given to Joseph about 200 years prior to this. And you can read about that in Genesis chapter 47. It was a very fertile area of about 300 square miles. It was about 15 miles by 20 miles. And the city of Ramses was built there by slave labor of the Israelites. And so they built that city, which was in the lower center of the land of Goshen. However, as we'll see in Scripture, there's no indication that the children of Israel left their homes in the middle of Passover night and journeyed to Ramses. There's no indication that they went there, that they, in the middle of the night, they got up and they left. I point this out because Exodus chapter 12, verse 37, tells us that Israel began leaving Egypt from Manassas, or from Ramses, not from Goshen. They left from Ramses, not Goshen. So somehow they had to get from their homes in Goshen to Ramses before they left. But where were the children of Israel on the night of the 14th? Where were they on the night of the 14th? Well, they remained in their homes the entire night in the land of Goshen, not in Ramses. So they stayed in their houses all night on the 14th. And they went to Ramses in the morning time, as we'll see. The next question is this. Question number 5. How long did it take to kill, roast, eat the lambs, and burn their bones and remains? How long did it take? Why is that even an important question? Why is that important? The reason it's important is because it will show us that there was not sufficient time for Israel to do all of the things that were required of them before they left Egypt. They couldn't have done it all in one night. So they couldn't have killed the lamb, dressed the lamb, roasted the lamb, eaten the lamb, burned up the remains, and all of that on the night of the 14th. So as we look at this in a time perspective, I think you'll be able to see clearly they couldn't have. Chapter 12, verse 6 says, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the month," the same month, that's the lamb. "Then the whole of the assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight." So between the two evenings. "And they shall take some of the blood," and they're going to put it on the lintel and on the doorpost. "And then they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head with its legs and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire." So when you look at the things that they were required to do, how long did this take? As you think about the lambs were to be about a year old. About a year old. So how much would a year-old lamb weigh? Generally, they weighed about 20 to 30 pounds. You might think of it in terms of a turkey. Most of us aren't roasting lambs, and so you might think of it as a turkey, a 20-pound turkey. How long would that take for you to roast? 15, 20 minutes? Probably not. So it wasn't going to take that little time for roasting the lamb. In the spring in Jerusalem, the 14th day of the first month would begin around 6 p.m. So for you to kill and bleed and bleed the lamb, a 20 to 30 pound lamb, it would take about probably 10 to 15 minutes to do that. And then you had to skin the lamb. So that means you're going to have to skin out that lamb and get it prepared to roast. So you had to kill it, get the blood and take some of the blood and put it on the doorpost and the lintel. Then you had to skin the lamb. So that was going to take a while. If you've ever, again, done a turkey, you know, you kill it, then you have to you know, old timers, you had to put it in the hot, scalding hot water, then you had to pluck all the feathers off. Now that may not be the standard procedure with turkeys. I just remember what we did with chickens when I was young. And you had to pull all those feathers off of there, and so that was always fun and a little on the smelly side, but that's the way it worked in ancient times. For you young people may be aghast at that, but that's how it used to be. I could be more graphic, but I won't. So anyway, you had to skin the lamb, and the lamb then would be put on a skewer for a spit or into an oven for roasting, and to be roasted whole with its head and its legs still intact. You couldn't break any of the bones, and because this portrayed Jesus Christ. So it had to be whole. The preparation for roasting, assuming the fire had already been prepared, would take about 10 to 15 minutes. And the process from the killing of the lamb would probably run about 45 minutes. And twilight would last 45 to 50 minutes, so there would be plenty of time to do all this before it was completely dark. To roast a lamb of that size so that it was thoroughly cooked would take about 4 to 5 hours. So if they're doing this about 6 and it's getting on towards 7 when they get finished and it takes 4 to 5 hours for it to roast, then they're going to be eating this at what time? Somewhere around 11 to 12 at night. So they're going to be eating this, and so it's very close to midnight by the time they're eating the lamb. And remember, it says that they're to eat this in haste. They're to eat this in haste. And we looked at the verse, the wording there, and it's kind of this idea they're going to eat it quickly with trepidation, fear and trepidation. Well, why would there be fear and trepidation around midnight? What's going on at midnight? God is passing through the land and killing the firstborn, and they know that this is going on. And they may live close enough to some Egyptians that they can hear the cries of the people at night. So they know this is going on. God is passing through the land, and God is taking the firstborn. They weren't just sitting back having a leisurely meal. So they were eating it in haste with a bit of fear and trepidation because of the fact that God was passing through the land and killing the firstborn. And it was something they had never been through before, and I'm sure there was some fear on their part. So what did they do after finishing the Passover meal a little after midnight? Well, Exodus 12, verse 10 says, "You shall let none of it remain until morning. And what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire." So they were to eat, and then whatever was left, they were to gather it all up, and they were to burn it completely. So if you have bones and you have flesh and you have fleece, all of those things left, it's going to take a few minutes for that burning to take place. And you had to have it burned up by morning. You couldn't leave any of it until then. So the thought is it may have taken from a couple of hours to 3 hours to burn it all up. And so it would be around 3 a.m. before all the requirements of Exodus 12 were completed. So they start at around 6 between the two evenings to kill the lamb, get the blood, and do what they were supposed to do with it. Then they were to prepare it and then roast it. And then they were to eat it. And then they were to dispose of it through burning. So sunset in the area of Jerusalem, or probably in Egypt as well, was probably about 6 a.m. So that's when the sun would rise, but it would begin to be first light somewhere around 5 a.m. So we know they left Egypt from Ramses. And we know that they left by night. That's what Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1 tells us. Plus, they were told not to go out of their residences until morning. That's what they were told in Exodus chapter 12, verse 22. So when you think about all that was required and you put it all together, you find there is no way that they would have had time to journey from Goshen to Ramses on foot, with all their animals, with all their belongings, and be ready to leave Egypt that same night. They couldn't have done it on the night of the Passover. There's just no way that's even possible. So to get to Ramses, Ramses was a city, and Goshen was a bigger place. And it would take, it was about by foot, somewhere between a mile and 15 miles, depending on where you lived in the land of Goshen. So if you were walking, which most of them were going to be walking, how long would it take if you're 15 miles away to get to the point where they're to meet up and leave in Ramses? How long does it take you to walk 15 miles? You know, if you're really going at a fairly good clip, it's about 3 miles an hour, so it's going to take you 5 hours to get over there. So, and if you're packing stuff and you've got animals with you, you know those animals are going to walk in a straight line, aren't they? So, you know, you're trying to keep them going in the right direction. Your kids, nope, stop it, Johnny, get over here with us. And you're trying to keep everything moving in the same direction toward Ramses. So you had to, and it would take some time. And you can see as you analyze the timing that this couldn't have been done in one night. Couldn't have been done. The next question is, when did the children of Israel leave their homes? So they were to stay in their homes all night. So when could they leave? They could leave when the day began to dawn, when it was first light. Okay, it's not dark anymore, it's first light. So they could begin to leave at that particular time. And as you look at this and analyze it, it helps you to understand why the idea of them this taking place on Passover and everything being accomplished on Passover evening just doesn't make sense. As you look at those who claim all this happened on the night of the 15th, saying morning can be any time after midnight, that doesn't make sense either. Doesn't make sense. The biblical command in Exodus chapter 12, verse 22 is quite clear. They were not to go out of their houses until morning. And Exodus chapter 12, 28 tells us they followed that instruction. They were faithful to God and listened to Moses, and so they did not go out. So the scriptures clearly tell us that Israel remained in their homes until morning. So the question then becomes, when was morning? Kind of discuss that. When was morning? Some say that morning is any time after midnight. Is that accurate from a biblical point of view? Or is morning when the first faint light of day appears? What does the Bible tell us? Let's take a look at the Hebrew word translated night to begin with. The Hebrew word translated night is layla, L-A-Y-L-A-H. And Vines defines this word as a period of time that is dark. And so it's dark. Layla, if you find that word in the text, it means dark. And the word for night first appears in Genesis chapter 1, verse 5. And God there called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So he was very clear which was which. So the evening and the morning were the first day. The darkness he called layla, or night, and so clearly layla refers to darkness, to the part of the 24-hour day when it's dark. Well, we're here, let's notice the rest of the verse. God called the light day. As I said, he called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And it's clear here that darkness, night, evening, all pertain to that part of the 24-hour day where between sunset and sunrise, that would be the period of darkness. That's how most of us would see it. That's how they saw it back then. The Hebrew word translated morning is the same word used in Exodus chapter 12, verse 22. That this is where God said, "None of you shall go out of your house until morning." And that word is boker, B-O-Q-E-R. And as you look in Genesis chapter 1, verse 5, that's the same word for morning there. Genesis chapter 1, verse 5. So boker means morning. And it's clearly associated with daylight, when it becomes daylight. And so was the time after midnight still called Layla or night? Good question. In Exodus chapter 29, Exodus chapter 12, verses 29 and 30, it helps us to understand what time it was when all of this is going on in the darkness. Exodus 12, verse 29. In verse 29 it says, And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So the angel, God comes through, the firstborn die, and then verse 30. Death has occurred in Pharaoh's house, and it says, so Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. So what time of the day, the 24-hour day, are we talking about here in Exodus chapter 12, verses 29 and 30? It's talking about night. It's the word there for night is Layla. The Pharaoh rose and it was still dark. And then verse 31, Exodus chapter 12, verse 31. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. So when did Pharaoh call Moses and Aaron? He called them at night. He called to them at night, Layla, and they came by night. So how long after midnight did this occur? We don't know exactly. We know it was still dark, though. We know that it was after midnight, and we know it was dark, morning has not come yet. And all of this is playing out with the death of the firstborn. And Aaron and Moses go to see the Pharaoh, and he tells them to get out. A couple of additional usages of Layla, or night, are helpful. As you look at Exodus chapter 13, verse 21. There it talks about the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. And it says of the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of cloud by night, these things were given so that they could go by day and night. And Exodus chapter 12, verse 22, it says, he did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before his people. So how long would they need the pillar of fire by night? Well, it was dark. And God provided light for them while it was dark. And was it only till midnight? I doubt it. When you get up at midnight, is it dark? For most of us it is, and it was for them too. So until the sun was beginning to come up, they needed that light from the pillar of fire. So this, as you see how it's used here in the Bible, it confirms that Layla, or night, refers to the entire period of darkness between sunset and sunrise. It's not referring to sunset and midnight or anything like that. Also, as you look at Exodus chapter 10, verse 13, Exodus chapter 10, verse 13, there it says, so Moses stretched out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. When it was morning, the east wind brought locusts. So this was one of the plagues. And the night, the word there is Layla, darkness, night. And then the morning was Boker. And this verse is significant for giving the biblical definition of both of these words, because it shows a complete period of light of the day followed by a complete period of darkness at night. And all this ends the next morning with Boker. So you see these words and you look at the words and you see how they're used, and it clearly supports our understanding of how these things played out. So as you look at Judges chapter 19, Judges chapter 19 helps us with an understanding of mourning again. Judges chapter 19, and that chapter clearly tells us when the morning begins. Judges chapter 19, verse 1. It talks about them doing that which was right in his own eyes. And they came to Gibeah. They ended up in the town square because no one would take them in. And an elderly man sees them and says, "You can't stay in the street. You've got to come and stay with us." And he invited them to stay with him. And then it goes on to talk about the terrible things that they did to this woman. And they abused her all night, which is Layla, until morning. And when did morning begin? It began with first light, as you see in those verses. And so you see, as you study the Bible and you look at how Boker for morning and you look at how light and day and night are all used, you see that it tends to support our understanding of the playing out of the Passover. And so as we look at this, when did the children of Israel leave their homes on Passover night? They left at morning. They didn't go out before then. They were not to go out before morning, as God had instructed. And that's exactly what they did. Seventh question. When did the Israelites spoil the Egyptians? When did the Israelites spoil the Egyptians? What happened on the daylight portion of the 14th if it's not when they killed the lambs? So they killed the lambs on the nighttime portion of the 14th. They had to stay in their houses all night, which they did, and they weren't to come out until morning. So when did they spoil the Egyptians? Now, some people believe it was before all of this started, but we'll see that's not accurate. So those who claim that the Passover occurred on the 15th claim the Egyptians had already been spoiled at some time prior to that, before the Passover and the death of the firstborn of Egypt. That's what the Jews claim, and that's what those who advocate a 15th Passover claim. They base their claim on the King James and the New King James translation of Exodus chapter 12, verses 35 and 36. And when you read those verses, you might draw that conclusion, but you can look at some other translations of those verses, and it helps you to see that that's not the case. You might look at the New Century version of Exodus 12, verse 34 and 35 through 36. The New Century Version says, "So the people took their dough before the yeast was added. They wrapped the bowls for making dough in clothing and carried them on their shoulders. The Israelites did what Moses told them to do and asked their Egyptian neighbors for things made of silver and gold and for clothing. And the Lord caused the Egyptians to think well of them. And the Egyptians gave the people everything they asked for, so the Israelites took rich gifts from them." So just thinking and inferring, how did the Egyptians feel toward the people of Israel before the death of the firstborn? How did they feel, do you think? Do you think they thought well of them or despised them? This is a pathetic slave people, inferior to all of us. But once the death angel had passed through the land and they suffered loss and the Israelites didn't suffer loss, then you have a situation where they looked on the Israelites a little bit differently. Obviously, their God, the God of Israel, has intervened to spare these people. So they understood this and had more respect for them. So when they asked for gold and silver, which was basically payment for the years that they had served the Egyptians, then they were more willing to give it. If they had asked before then, it wouldn't have happened. What are you talking about? There's no way we're going to give you anything. So God in his mercy granted the people of Israel favor in the eyes of the Egyptians after the death of the firstborn. And so you can see here that this took place on the daylight portion of the 14th. And we can get more insight into this by going back to Exodus chapter 3, verse 19. Exodus chapter 3, verse 19. So God is laying out what he's going to do for Israel in chapter 3. And he's going through things and telling them how this is going to go. Exodus 3, verse 19. It says there, "But I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. No, not even by a mighty hand." So he's Moses came and said, "Let my people go," didn't he? And Moses and Pharaoh said, "Sure, go ahead and go." No, he didn't say that. He wasn't going to say that until God inflicted pain on him and the people of Israel and great loss with the death of the firstborn. Verse 20 says, "So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst. And after that, he will let you go." But that wasn't going to be how it started out. There had to come a time of pain and suffering before he was going to let them go. After God basically said, "After I strike Egypt with all my wonders, then he will let you go." And we know there were 10 wonders or 10 plagues in order to break the will of the Egyptians. After all God's wonders had been accomplished, what would happen next? Let's go to Exodus chapter 3, verse 21. Exodus chapter 3, verse 21. There it says, "And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it shall be when you go, when you shall not, that you shall not go empty-handed. But every woman shall ask of her neighbor, namely of her who dwells near her house, articles of silver, articles of gold and clothing, and you shall put them on your sons and on your daughters, and you shall plunder the Egyptians." So clearly the indication is that the Egyptians would not give Israel favor until after they had gone through all the traumas of the plagues or the wonders. And after the 10th plague, the Egyptians wanted Israel to leave. They basically said, "Get out. You can't get out fast enough." And they saw that they had favor with God, and they did give them of some of their riches. So so when would they have spoiled the Egyptians and asked for all of those things that God told them to ask for? Well, they would do this on the afternoon of the 14th, during the daylight portion of the 14th. Before they actually left the land. So they asked the Egyptians for these things, and they gathered them all together. Then they began making their way to Ramses. So all of this, there's a lot of things that have to take place here before they leave the land. So the next question is this, the eighth question. When and where did the Exodus begin? When and where did the Exodus begin? It began in Ramses. It began in Ramses. And we learned that from Exodus chapter 12, verse 36. Exodus chapter 12, verse 36. It says, "And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth." They journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, and that Succoth was the first place they stopped on their journey out of the land of Egypt. "About 600,000 men on foot, besides children, a mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock." So Ramses was the beginning point of their journey. It was a rendezvous point where all the people of Israel came together. They all met there, got organized, and then they headed out of the land. They assembled at Ramses. So when you add women, children, and a mixed multitude to about 600,000, you're probably looking at about 2 million people. And, I'm a little intimidated organizing 500 people at the feast, much less 2 million. That's a pretty good sized group. Pretty good sized group. So they had all these people, they had flocks and herds and a lot of things to get organized. So Numbers, the book of Numbers, gives us a detailed account of their departure from Ramses. Let's go to Numbers chapter 33. and look at verse 1. Numbers chapter 33 and look at verse 1. Numbers 33, verse 1. There it says, "These are the journeys of the children of Israel, who went out of the land of Egypt by their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron." So it talks about the different journeys that they made as they went to the land of promise. And so it chronicles the different places they went to. Verse 2. "Now Moses wrote down the starting points of their journeys at the command of the Lord, and these are the journeys according to their starting points." So, when did this begin? Where did it begin? And Moses was told by God to write down where their journeys begin. Verse 3, it says, "They departed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians." So, Israel went out from Ramses on the 15th day of the first month. And on the day after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of the Egyptians. So they left from the city of Ramses, not from the general area of Goshen. And as I said, they started from Ramses in the first month on the 15th day of the month after sunset on the 15th. It says, and how do we know that? How do you know they left after sunset? The first day of unleavened bread, which we showed in the last sermon, commemorates their exodus from Egypt. They left on the day after Passover. And if you look at what was going on with the Egyptians, they're leaving, and what are the Egyptians doing? They're taking care of their firstborn. All of the deaths that have taken place among the people of Egypt, they're taking care of them, getting them ready for burial. And as Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1 tells us, it says that they came out of Egypt by night. They came out by night. So they began leaving Egypt on the night of the 15th, at the very beginning of the first day of unleavened bread. And they left from Ramses by their armies. So what does it mean they left by armies? It meant that they got organized into different units. And knowing that you had 12 tribes, they were probably organized by tribe. And they began their journey out of the land of Egypt. It wasn't, you know, like, you know, if you remember back to when the Sooners came into Oklahoma. How did they do that? You had all these people lined up on the state line. And there was a gunshot or whatever it was, and they all headed for the land in Oklahoma. That's why they call them Sooners. The Sooners were already in there, but anyway, the rest started coming along, and they went into the land of Oklahoma. And it was just kind of a free-for-all. And everybody tried to get to their parcel of land, and probably they had scouted it out and whatever. But anyway, they went to their parcel of land, and they had to claim it and indicate that they had claimed it. But this was organized. God was leading them out with a pillar of fire by night, and they went out and they followed God, Moses and God, out front to lead them out of the land. And they came out by night. That's why we have the night to be observed, because we're reminded of their journey out of Egypt. And God was leading them, and it's a very special night in God's sight because it harkens back to a great event in the history of the people of God. So does the first day of unleavened bread memorialize this event? It absolutely does. And that's why we get together on that night and enjoy a meal together, keeping in mind of what God did for Israel on that night. So, to put it simply, the first day of unleavened bread memorializes their leaving Egypt. They began leaving Egypt at the end of the Passover when the first day of unleavened bread began, and they began their journey out of Egypt at the beginning of the first day of unleavened bread at night. So, as you think about this, just another couple of aspects of this, how much time would be required for all the Israelites to leave their houses and journey to Ramses? Just think about that. They didn't leave from their houses. Their starting point was Ramses. Numbers 33 clearly tells us that. So how long would it take for them to journey to Ramses, assemble, and get ready to leave? How long would it take? As I said, the land of Goshen was about 15 miles by 20 miles. And with Ramses at the south border of the land of Goshen toward the center. So when it was morning, they could go out and they could spoil the Egyptians. So they had, and then they had to get their household, their cattle, whatever they're taking out of the land, they have to get it together. And they're to be at Ramses so that they can leave at sunset. So as I said, some people would travel a couple of miles. Some people would travel close to 18 miles. And it took them a while to get there. And all of this had to be accomplished. And as you think about that, there's no way they could have done it all in one night. Just couldn't have been done as you step back and think about this. So we can see an overview of Israel's first Passover. They killed the lamb at the beginning of the 14th between sunset and darkness. The lambs were killed at their homes or their neighbor's home. And it would take 5 to 6 hours to slaughter and prepare the lambs for eating. All you have to do is to think about how long is it going to take. How long does it take you to get your turkey to ready to put into the oven? And then once you put it in there, it's going to take a while for it to roast. And they had to wait for the lamb to be fully roasted. And they began to eat around midnight. And at that, there, as they're eating, that the God is passing through and killing the firstborn. And that's why they ate with fear and trepidation, because God was passing through the land and taking the lives of the Egyptians who had not put the blood on their doorpost and lintel. Then they had to burn the remains, which would have taken another couple of hours, because if you've ever tried to burn up a body, it takes a while. It doesn't just happen instantaneously. It takes a while. And most of us have not done that, I'm sure. But anyway, I'm not implying anybody has. Sorry. But anyway, if I could have said that better. But anyway, if it takes a while. If you had to burn like remains of a whatever animal you had, a 20 to 30 pound animal, and the parts that were still remaining, it would take a while to do that. So anyway, I'll eliminate that from future thought when I do this. It says, then they remained in their house until Boker, that is in the morning, at first light when they could begin to come out of the house. And after leaving their homes on the daylight portion of Passover day, they spoiled the Egyptians. They then left for the assembling of the nation at Ramses. They got there, they got organized for the journey at Ramses. They then began departing from Ramses as daylight waned on the 14th and the 15th began. And they began their journey out of Egypt on the first day of unleavened bread. And that's why we keep the night to be observed, because we look back to this event. And we were never in Egypt. We don't understand this completely, but we do know that it has an application to you and me, because God has called us out of Egypt, which is represented by the world and is taking us to the promised land. So hopefully that gives you a little bit better understanding of the timing of all these things, when the lamb was killed and some of the other things that pertain to it. So at about, four o'clock, we'll start the Bible study. 4 o'clock. You get plenty of time to fellowship. Sunset is until 6:15. So we'll start the Bible study at 4. And the Bible study is going to talk about the cleansing of the temple. So it's been interesting. You know, it's always been interesting to me that, this is just an aside here. It's always been interesting to me when you begin to study something, you begin, well, that's kind of interesting, and you begin looking at it, and as you begin looking at it, this leads to that, and that leads to this, and you find different things, and it is amazing. Like I said I remembered a sermon that had been given in 2010, and it was called Two Powers in Heaven. All right, so for some reason, somebody said at the conference we went to in not too long ago, they said, you know, that adds all the things we're talking about the nature of God. That kind of adds some information about the two powers in heaven. And I thought, two powers in heaven? And I actually remembered this sermon. So it's been quite interesting what was said in the sermon and then other things that we have found in regard to the subject. Been quite interesting. So out of that I gleaned some things about the cleansing of the temple, and so we'll take a look at that in the Bible study.